Welcome to another edition, dear listeners, of Historical, with myself, Matt Nelson, and Wayne Bridgman.
Hello.
We hope that 2016 is treating you well so far. We're halfway through the year, the summer's hit us, but the craziness that has hit the UK has obviously affected us all over the last couple of weeks here in the UK. So, we mean Brexit.
Well, we've been busy writing away, actually, listeners, trying to keep ourselves distracted from events, or should I say event, as Matt said.
Well, the Brexit. Event, yeah, it's a huge event.
The UK, you may have heard, you may not care, has voted to leave the European Union with interesting ramifications. We'll see what happens there, but fear not, for we still have electricity, the sky hasn't fallen on our heads.
Yeah, we are just trying to charge up the generator at the moment, just so we can continue the podcast.
If you can hear a whirring noise, don't worry about that. Now, before we get started today, listeners, we've had a couple of people write in and mention to us that they can't sync up all of the episodes with whichever podcast software they're using. So, if you need to download MP3s directly to get around that little issue, just go to historical.podomatic.com.
That's Podomatic.
Or just Google Historical Podcast and you'll see the same thing. You can download the MP3s directly from there.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, that one's out the way. More on to how to contact us later. Well, Matt just chokes to death there.
Right, bizarrely choking on air.
So, what on earth could we be talking about today, Matt? Where are we going with this episode?
Excuse me, listeners. I'm just choking. I still feel like I've got a frog in my throat. Okay.
Just like when you went on that school trip to Paris. apologies for the coughing, listeners. This is live.
This is a live podcast. Right, okay. So let me pose this question to you, Wayne, and the listeners.
Okay.
Now, and then think about this. If you were given absolute power.
Oh,
listen to those words. Absolute power.
Absolute power.
For your lifetime.
Yes.
How would it affect you if you were the ruler of the largest empire the world had ever known?
Yeah.
Would you be able to be a gracious, humble king or queen?
Almost certainly king.
Casting a shadow of controlled and balanced power that the population seeks to imitate and revere.
Understandable.
Or would the power,
unlimited power,
affect and corrupt you?
No, I don't think so.
Would you rule with terror, fear, and malevolence? For want of a better description, would you become a massive knobend?
So, it's an interesting question you pose, Matt. Would I, King Wayne, the first of his name, be an inspiration to my people? Be just and fair God?
You mean a man, not God. You mean a man, right?
A man, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, I mean man, yes. Yes, not a God.
You said God, though.
Well, not an actual God, of course. Just a sort of a man God. A God amongst men, if you will. Like a demigod, maybe.
Wait a minute. Oh, dear. I can see where we're going wrong here. Well, okay, your great Jupiterness, can you focus on the question at hand and restrain your excitement?
Anyhow, or would I build in the centre of a city, my city, a big white tower, a huge towering erection?
With maybe two large golden orbs either side of it to maybe symbolise your rule?
No. Only I was allowed up this tower, Matt, okay? Only King Wayne the First is allowed up the tower.
Right, okay, no one else.
Now,
king.
I'm visualising this, don't spoil it. At the top of this tower, I'd sit upon a gilded throne, Matt.
Yes,
there'd be sort of like, we're just seeing it now, levers and buttons and little flashing lights. And when I pressed them, like trap doors would open around the city and the walls would move and things.
Oh,
I could even sort of order people around up there.
Oh, man, I think power has gone to his head. This man has gone crazy with power.
I could sit up there all day laughing manically as I controlled my people to do my bidding. Is that what you're saying?
I guess yes. I mean, I didn't quite expect the graphic tower imagery.
Well,
though I will admit, it was a quite a revealing view in regards to your psychology. But yes, essentially, would you become a power-mad psychopath or a wonderful, inspirational king?
Well, no, fear not. I'll just be a king. As long as I have my tower. I really, really want my tower.
The tower's key, isn't it?
What we're trying to say here, listeners, we're trying to say power can corrupt.
Yes, you can have your tower with your levers and your buttons. In fact, if for my part, well, I think I'd start to be a fair ruler to start with. But one day, you know, maybe one of my servants would step on my cloak and I'd go, absolutely.
Well, you've got to be careful, you see. Power can do strange things to people's minds.
And it was a rhetorical question. Oh. As this leads us listeners to today's podcast, we go back.
Smooth.
Through time and space.
Isn't that space and time?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Through the cosmos, through Jupiter, past Saturn.
And up Uranus. You see, we're going this. This is Roman gods, you see, the planets.
And out we plop.
Roman.
With a splat.
A sinking mess.
Having time travelled to ancient Rome. Oh. When last we travelled here, we told you about the third emperor of Rome, a certain guy called Caligula. And what a mad totter he was. Making his horse a console, collecting seashells on the beach, and all manner of depravity.
Yes, such depravity. Enough to impress a Catholic priest.
Controversial, of course. So much so that we were inundated by you, the listeners. Thank you very much, of course, for your messages, as always. To go back to ancient Rome, you six bunch of so-and-so's. Seriously, we love you for it, though.
So, with the deeply feared and unpopular Caligula killed, episode 3, listeners, catch up on that one if you haven't already.
Yes, absolutely. It's called Caligula.
Yep. The Romans went for an altogether milder blend of emperor and elected the stuttering and supposed simpleton,
but surprisingly good in reality,
Claudius to the throne. Agrippina, who was the Emperor Claudius's niece and Caligula's sister,
see previous podcast called Caligula,
again, was recalled from exile,
where Caligula, her brother, had sent her towards the end of his reign.
It's always difficult to follow these Roman power politics, listeners, yep. So you might have to write some of this down to follow it properly. Yep. And her son was taken into the large, plump bosom of the Roman elite and given a good, solid education.
Absolutely. Very key.
Claudius ruled Rome for 13 largely amazing years, actually.
Quite amazing, really, considering.
Yeah, and Agrippina took no time introducing the stuttering Claudius, and in AD 49 she married him, actually. And the task of educating the young Nero, we'll talk about his relationship to these two in a minute, was handed to the eminent philosopher Lucius Amneus Seneca. Seneca, big name in Rome, of course.
A wise man indeed.
Yes, he was a poet and intellectual. Two don't always go hand in hand. So, all is well in Rome. Blue bloods marrying each other. The establishment was happy.
Now, further cementing the blue bloods together, Agrippina allowed her son, who was called Nero, to be betrothed to Claudius's daughter, Octavia. You see where they're going here? Cementing the alliance. That's how it worked in these old days. The joining of two blue bloods together cements the seats of power.
So pretty much like the storyline for Game of Thrones.
Indeed, actually, yes, very true. The story of Nero, though, really begins not with his birth.
It would begin with his birth, wouldn't it?
Not the story of his ascension to power.
I see.
But when his mother Agrippina in AD 50 persuaded the Roman Emperor Claudius, who we discussed, to adopt Nero as his own son.
So he's adopted, okay.
So he's married Agrippina, he's now adopted Nero as his own son. Now this meant that Nero now took precedence over Claudius's own younger child, a guy called Britannicus.
Good name.
As he was the older of the two, so it goes in age. It was at his adoption that he assumed the catchy name Nero Claudius Drusus Germanicus.
Oh, it is a catchy name. Have you ever heard one?
It is. And why such a long set of essentially first names. I hear you shout into your iPhones.
There are other devices available, such as Android or even Windows.
Yes, please stop shouting. These names were clearly largely in honour of his maternal grandfather, Germanicus, who had been an extremely popular commander with the army and blue blood relative to Augustus himself, the first of the Roman emperors. Germanicus, as you might recall, was the late Emperor Caligula's father, as he was that of Agrippina's as well.
Yes, he was as popular as cheese on toast, you could say.
Or as popular as an iPad is to my 10-year-old son.
Can't argue with that. Evidently, it was felt that a future emperor was well advised to bear the name which reminded the troops of greatness of the name of which his blood came from.
Yeah, let's lather ourselves in the shampoo of greatness. Let's get into all those crannies and cracks and bask in the Yoda all day.
Available at stores now.
Nice.
In AD 51, Matt, upon persistent wrangling from Agrippina, Claudia named Nero the heir apparent.
Well, we all know, of course, that power of a persistent woman.
Oh, yes, we do.
Oh, that power is very great indeed. Now, this was probably a death sentence for Claudius. By naming Nero heir, he essentially made it obvious who his backfill...
That's corporate speak for his successor, listeners.
So his backfill is identified... should he suddenly die. Not that it was likely, of course, that he would suddenly die, but just to be clear to all, Claudius was covering his bases.
Yeah, it's good to have that down on paper.
You know, make sure, if I die, I'm not going to die, I've just married a woman I love.
Just in case.
But if I do die, her son will be heir. Yeah. Great. But he obviously felt secure in the love of a good woman, Agrippina.
Basically, life insurance for a Roman emperor would have been sky high.
Yeah. To name Nero as his heir, he must have felt secure. His previous wife had not been trustworthy, Wayne. She had, in fact, placed a wager with a local Roman prostitute, of all things. Guess what the wager was?
Oh, I don't know. Beat off a horse?
No.
Or money.
That's a lot worse than actually what the wager was.
Oh.
I can't imagine. I can't get that image out of my head.
First thing that came into my head.
Me problem. It was actually who could... So she bet, right, with a local prostitute who could sleep with more men in one day.
Oh, those Romans.
But guess what? The Empress won.
By a length.
You're right. She did. She did win it by one man. Yes. Which the professional prostitute found hard to swallow. So after Claudius found out and about her intention subsequently to marry someone else while still being married to Claudius, he did what any man in Rome would have done.
Had sex with her?
Divorced her.
Divorced her. Right.
Yeah. He duly had her executed.
I guess she was used to seeing a chopper swinging towards her head, actually. Wasn't she, this one?
Oh, Jesus.
Well, anyway. Well, he was really keen to marry someone he trusted. And also came from the same bloodline as himself. After all, Agrippina and Claudius could tie their bloodlines back to Julius Caesar himself and Augustus himself.
Doesn't get bluer than that.
All relationships work best with trust and unity. You're a team. You win and lose together. You're soulmates. And after all, he also had the loving loyalty of his Praetorian Guard, which is very important. Good for you, Claudius. Keep that spark alive. To love is to trust.
That's the key to happiness, guys. I'm happy for him.
Okay. Not now, Matt. Not now you're on air. To love is to trust, Matt, isn't it? The key to a long, happy life. Not now. Not now. So, alas. Sorry about that, listeners. Alas, in AD 54, Claudius died, in inverted commas, almost certainly poisoned by his, again, inverted commas, loving and adoring wife.
Or not so adoring wife. Replace that with scheming, treacherous, hyper ambitious cow.
The blood runs deep.
Agrippina, supported by the prefect of the much trusted Praetorian leader Sextus.
Sextus is a good one.
Yeah, no, he was called Sextus. He was called Sextus Afranius Burrus.
Of course he was, yeah.
Perhaps,
sorry,
if Claudius had never made Nero his heir, the Roman Empire would not have been denied the departure of, potentially, Wayne, one of the top five, yes, we're making the call on historical, top five Roman emperors to ever rule Rome.
Really?
As an empire.
Was he that good?
He was indeed. Proof be it that being able to not clearly state the word Wisible, Wodger, Wotherwick and Rampart were never a barrier to greatness in the ancient world.
Well, look at Jonathan Ross.
Jonathan Ross, indeed. Exactly, Wayne. Old Wothy never had an issue with that. Of course, the film The King's Speech shows how a monarch can be undone with a stutter. And Claudius was not the only leader to have a dyslexic tongue.
This is true. He was indeed. Poisoned. Now, listeners, remember this for later. In Claudius's years of rule, he expanded the empire by conquering a cheeky little island called Britain. But
Britain didn't go down without a fight.
You can tell that about our history of football, right? To give that much about our people.
But fall it did, alas. And not for the last time was our little island
to feel the rough, hairy hand of an invader sliding up its smooth, delicate thigh.
Well, I was going to say weight of an invader's might, but that works too. I mean, what you want to see in your mind's eye about the invading warrior is completely up to you. But listeners, it's worth noting that the Britons, whilst beaten into submission,
but not beaten off,
were by no means subjugated. Yes, they would accept the rule of Rome if treated with respect, but like most Britons, push them too far and, oh, you better watch out. Boy, you better watch out. These guys might write you a strongly worded letter or even hit you with a major, and I mean major, leaflet campaign. So beware the wrath of the Britons.
And more of that later. So, with Claudius's death, it cleared the way for Nero to become emperor. Now, it's very possible that Nero did not want this. His mother had pulled the strings. She'd moved the chess pieces into position.
She'd tugged a few knobs.
Ha-ha! She probably had, more than likely, tugged a few knobs. And made his ascent to power.
Unlimited power!
A certainty. Yes, it was certain to take power. Agrippina made sure Nero's acceptance by the Roman elite was done swiftly before anyone could raise a concern, an eyebrow or a wagging, disapproving finger in the direction of him to question his appointment. But since Nero was not yet 17 years old, he was a young 16-year-old boy. Agrippina the Younger.
For that was her official name. Weird Roman names there, listeners.
She first acted as the regent of Rome.
Well, unofficially that was.
Yeah. She believed she really had the power, not Nero. She put him in charge. He was more of a puppet. And so did some of the knobs she'd been tugging. Yeah. Believe that as well.
Well, Agrippina, as we recall, Matt, is a unique woman in Roman history. And in fact, we're toying...
Something I'm sure she's used to doing.
Yeah, we're toying with the idea of her own podcast dedicated
to
her,
actually. She is an amazing character, spanned the lifetime of quite a few different people.
She was the sister of Caligula, the wife of Claudius, and the mother of Nero, and barely survived, one of the few to, the purges of Tiberius. This lady had her thumb on the nub of power. But Agrippina's dominant position did not last for long, like anyone in a position of power in Rome. She failed to realise that a 16-year-old teenage boy did not like to be told by his mother what to and not to do. Funny that. Nothing's changed in almost 2,000 years there, Matt.
Let's just say some major adolescence kicked in with Nero. And he's reported to have said, and I quote,
"You're so pathetic, mother."
And in some reports, he's quoted as saying,
"You don't know, not know nothing, you don't."
And inside sources within our department say he said,
"She don't know what it's like to be me and what I have to go through. She just does not understand. It's so unfair."
And finally, one of our sources said,
"It's so unfair it is. I just want to be a gladiator and see my friends. And she makes me read all these books."
Yes, listeners, the Romans have just put a hormonally charged teenager on the throne of the largest empire the world has ever seen. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong indeed? Shall we find out? So what did this lad of 16 look like? Let's just say he's not exactly what some of you ladies out there listening might describe as a catch. He was fair-haired.
Well, that's fine so far.
Yeah. He's got, he had pale blue eyes.
What are you talking about? He seems fine.
A fat neck.
Bit odd, getting odd.
A pot belly.
Okay, so he's maybe sounding a little bit more like Pavarotti in, say, his heyday.
Yeah, and also a body which apparently, Matt, smelt and was covered with spots.
Yeah, okay. So not a poster child then, unless you're advertising the before photo for makeover.
Yeah, well, he usually appeared in public in a sort of dressing gown thing, without a belt, then a scarf around that sort of fat neck thing of his, and no shoes. Essentially like a bum or a tramp or someone from the recent London Fashion Awards. You know, hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Well, indeed it is. Now, we welcome back, and we're very happy to have this guy back on the historical podcast. We've not seen him since episode 3. The great Professor Harrington. He's been absent from the podcast. He's unfortunately had a triple bypass and a hip operation, hip replacement, all in the same year. But, you know, for his age, he seems very, very resilient, and he's back to join us on Historical, which is fantastic. And, well, with no further ado, let us hear from a quote, our good professor.
Oh. What? Is he? He was about average height, with a... He had a body, yes, that's right. A body marked with spots and all malodorous it was. Horrible thing. His hair was sort of light and blonde, from what they say. You know, hay-like hair sort of thing. Yes. And his, what are you doing? Yes, I'm doing. His health, you see, was good. Though indulging, he was in every riotous excess. He was ill! But three times! That's all! In all his 14 years of reign, he was ill just three times. That was it for him, despite all that. That quote was from bloody Suetonius in his writing, The Life...
Almost there.
The life of,
it's his name, isn't it? It's fucking Nero, for God's sake.
The life of Claudius.
Nero!
Get away from me!
Thank you, Professor.
Great to have him back.
It is great to have him back. I'm so glad he's he recovered.
Yes, I'm glad too.
In character, though, Nero, he was a strange mix of paradoxes.
How?
He was the artist. The sporting.
Right. How could he be?
He could be brutal. Weak. Sensual. Erratic. Extravagant. Sadistic. And, of course, bisexual.
Well, possibly a fan of the Sacred Band there. See episode 2, Ancient Special Forces, listeners.
Yes, a very popular podcast, that one. And later in life, almost certainly he was deranged. So... Wayne, if I were a profiling specialist working for the Met Police or the New York Police Department, we'd probably put him on the one-to-watch list.
And possibly tap his phone, if he had one. So you'd think it's all going to go wrong from the start. Surely this guy's a bit crazy. Well, you'd be wrong to think that. Because for a period, the Empire actually enjoyed very sound government, Matt. Nero listened to his mum.
Ah, but for a short period of time.
Yeah, and under the guidance of the leader of the Praetorian Guard, a guy called Burrus, and the wise and sage-like...
Yoda-esque.
...philosopher Seneca. So Burrus, as we mentioned, was the leader of the Praetorian Guard and had helped Agrippina with the assassination of Claudius, so they say. And Seneca was a renowned philosopher, a great and wise man who wrote some of the great poems, actually,
oh,
at the time.
Oh, to be a cloud floating over Rome.
Did he do that?
No, I just made that up, actually.
Yes.
Could you tell?
I thought so. Probably in Latin for a start.
Yeah, it's true.
So keep the day job.
Yeah.
So his role, remember, was given to him by Agrippina. And he was supposed to pass on his learned wisdom and patience to a hormonal teenager, our Nero, obsessed with music, sex and violence, like most teenagers.
Alas, this particular teenager was given complete control of the largest empire the world had ever seen. Just imagine, listeners, if Justin Bieber not only did his chart music, but also ran the United States of America. A scary, scary thought.
A bit like in North Korea, mandatory silly haircuts for everyone.
Some positives about Nero. With strong and very directional leadership of Seneca and Burrus, Nero announced he sought to follow the example of the great and much loved and missed Augustus's reign. So this was a great emperor he was following. The Senate was treated respectfully and granted greater freedoms than before. The late Claudius was deified.
That's sort of made into a god.
And sensible legislation was introduced to improve public order.
Such as no jerking off in public. That's what it did happen.
Yeah. I was thinking of a rule about controlling rowdy crowds or litter dropping.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, they probably had that one as well, yeah. if it was needed, of course. Reforms were made to the treasury and provincial governors were prohibited from extorting large sums of money to pay for gladiatorial shows in Rome.
Well, it seems crazy, actually, doesn't it, to our modern ears, to hear that extortion such as this was prohibited for a good 100 years after the formation of Rome. Ah, the power of money, Matt's not changed, really, has it?
It hasn't, indeed.
No. Well, Nero himself followed in the steps of his predecessor, Claudius, in applying himself rigorously, Matt, to his judicial. Some
judicial.
Some law stuff. That's what it was, listeners. That's what it was. Judicial duties. There we go. He sounds great, actually. He's almost the perfect leader. He's young, he's connected to Julius Caesar and Augustus by blood. He listens to his elders, okay, not his mum always, but hey, he's just a teenage boy. He also considered liberal ideas, Matt, such as ending the killing of gladiators, pretty liberal, for the time. And he also condemned criminals in public spectacles. What a guy. In fact, Nero, most likely, actually, largely due to the influence of his tutor, Seneca, came across as a very humane ruler at first. They all start that way. When the city prefect, Lucius Pedanius Secundus, was murdered by one of his slaves, always frowned upon very heavily in Rome, Nero was intensely upset that he was forced by law to have all 400 slaves of Pedanius's household put to death, all of them.
Now, the Romans loved this, though. No one wanted another Spartacus slave uprising that had killed thousands and thousands of blue-blooded Romans. Good, strong leadership. Well done, Nero. Have a strong Cafe Nero Americano coffee on me. Have an extra shot from the lads from Historical as well. But a teenager he was. Now, listeners, close your eyes.
Unless you're listening to this while driving, then just simply put off the road, apply the handbrake. Not asking you to sort of self-pleasure yourself here. Put off the road.
Don't pull off...
Park, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
No other kind of...
And then when you're safe, close your eyes and just imagine.
Now, take yourself back, if you're not already a teenager, of course, to when you were a spotty, confused teenager. Great times, or were they? It was hard working out what you wanted to be, what you might be famous for. If you were a guy, which Nero was, you know, you maybe thought of a number of things in between being very aroused, being accepted, looking for a role model. I want to be different, but not that different. You know, working out where you fit in the world.
Being sexually frustrated because you've got a fat neck.
Fighting.
Being sexually frustrated in general.
Being a hero.
Being annoyed that you can't get laid because you've got a pot belly.
Adulation.
And finally, of course, feeling sexually frustrated about having a fat neck.
Again. Oh, man. How did he have time, this Nero, to think about taxation or settling trade disputes? How did Nero do this? He was dealing with all this crap and running the empire at the same time. The crime, perhaps, is not why Nero was such a bad ruler. Perhaps the crime is who thought a 16-year-old boy could rule something as vast as Rome.
But that does not excuse him. Oh, no, not at all. Perhaps Nero was more interested in visiting Sister Palm and her five lovely daughters.
Or having a five-knuckle shuffle, or popping down to Baywatch to visit Pamela Henderson.
That's right, rather than running Rome. It was no doubt that such thought processes, which gradually lessened Nero's resolve for administrative duties and caused him to withdraw more and more, devoting himself to such interests as horse racing and sort of singing and acting, dancing, poetry, opposite sex, wrestling the old trouser snake of lust at any given time. Basically, what we're trying to get at here is that if you put a 16-year-old child in control of the most powerful empire on earth at the time, things aren't necessarily going to go smoothly.
Now, Seneca and Burrus tried to guard him against these excesses, and they were excesses, and encouraged him to have an affair, of course.
That was to sort of try and channel his curious desires.
And they did this with a freed woman named Claudia Acte.
He wanted to get active with Acte, didn't he? Well, I hoped he would.
He needed to clear the royal siege engine, and Acte proved to be a willing wall to pound. As Nero became more interested in this, Seneca, Burrus, and to an extent his mother, covered his tracks and gave the Senate and the Empire the view that Nero was in charge and making sound policy decisions. In short, Nero's excesses were hushed up, and between the three of them, they did that very successfully.
Yeah, now, the affair with Claudia Acte was also done for political reasons, of course. There was a nasty rumour, there's no smoke without fire, going around Rome that Nero was a little too close to his mother, and not necessarily in a good way.
If you take what Wayne is getting at.
So, with Claudia on the scene, of course, Seneca and Burrus could spread the rumour that, or quash that rumour, and spread the rumour that Nero was definitely not close to his mother in that way, and was being, they're sort of inferring that he's just, you know, a red-blooded Roman.
And not with any mummy issues.
Yeah, so Nero did not like these rumours, and when news reached Nero of what sort of awful, angry gossip was being spread about him, he became, as you might expect, enraged and hostile towards his mother. It's not that cool and hip, really, to be having such things alluded to about you.
Mm.
And as a result, from that point onward, he sort of distanced himself from his mother, really, and distanced her from all his affairs, which meant that she sort of became isolated and really out of his power circle, which obviously aggravated her no end. And she plotted to get back.
So shunted aside by Nero, who sought not to share power with anyone, Agrippina was moved to a separate residence, away from the imperial palace and from the levers and knobs of power. Agrippina was outraged at such behaviour. She had spent years planning her attempt to get her hands around the levers and knobs of power, and her son was proving to be disinterested in running the empire in the way that she wanted.
It's like he's his own person or something.
Yeah. She was also jealous of Claudia Acte and deplored her son's Greek taste for the arts.
Well, actually, theatre was considered feminine by the Romans, but some of them still loved the old Greek plays.
An Agrippina was used to playing dangerous games, but if you play for the throne of power, the stakes are going to be high.
Yeah, higher than a crack addict being left alone overnight with the contents of a drug bust. It's pretty high. Now, Claudius' legitimate son, remember? Britannica, his name was. Was the only other person alive with a true claim to the throne. So he was coming of age and would soon wear the robes of a man.
Essentially being past the age of 16.
Yeah. And thus he would be able to also take over the empire should, for example, Nero suddenly become horribly ill and die, or if the Senate overthrew his rule. That's the other option that was there. Clearly, this was somewhere already embedded in Nero's subconscious, this risk.
So Agrippina suggested...
Well, threatened, really.
Yeah, to Nero during an argument that Britannicus had as much right to the throne as Nero did. In fact, maybe more.
That's some dynamite stuff right there. Very ballsy. I bet he went crazy, didn't he?
Yeah. She then started to promote Britannicus around the Senate as a possible emperor in the making.
A dangerous game.
Then started to suggest to Nero that she might well go to the Praetorian Guard with Britannicus and present him as a rightful heir and implicate Nero in the late Claudius's murder.
Oh, she's playing with fire there for sure. Let's hope she doesn't get burnt.
Or do others get burnt?
Well, perhaps not the best thing to say to headstrong hormonal leaders, that sort of thing, is it? Nero reacted in a way perhaps not that hugely surprising. The day before Britannicus came of age, what's he going to do? Well, Nero invited him to a banquet.
Well, that's not so bad. I thought he was going to do something much worse than that.
It's not suspicious at all. I mean, he just invited him to a banquet.
Oh, lovely. What a lovely guy.
In honour of him being about to become a man. Will he make it? Well, let's go back and see how the night went. Ah, there you are, brother. Now, thank you for having this banquet in my honour, brother Nero. I've got to say, it's touching that you care so much to do all this for me. It really means a lot. I mean, I'm just these canapes are beautiful. I've got some lovely lark's tongues here.
Yes.
I've just, these jaguar testicles, absolutely beautiful. Pop them in the mouth. Delicious.
They're proper Asian jaguar testicles. Oh, nothing from Africa. It's absolutely amazing, yes. So nonsense, dear boy. When I was your age, just 4 years back, when I became a man, it was the making of me.
Well, quite.
Oh, yes, it was. I felt the thrill of being a man, not a boy. Oh, yes.
You felt the thrill of a man, yes.
I became emperor, after all. Come on, let's have a toast. Slave! Slave!
Yes.
Get Britannicus a man's drink. Here, fill it up with my special goblet.
Yes, right away, master of all I see. Right away.
Thank you. You know, this is all very exciting, isn't it? Very exciting. Why has our mother not come today? You know,
I
really thought she'd. This is the first time we've done this in a year. I really thought she would be here. She's been so good to me, so very friendly to me of late, you know, brother.
Oh, she has something to do, and you know, this is more of a boys' night.
Oh,
yes, it is a boys' night. Yeah. Here, slave. Here's your drink. Here you are.
Ah. Oh, thank you, brother. Don't mind if I do. It's very, got a very pungent aroma, this wine. You're not trying to poison me, are you?
Oh, yeah. As if I would. Okay. All rise! Roman senators, lend me your ears, not your necks. Let us wish Britannica here a long and healthy life. To Britannicus, now drink. Maybe some words from you, Britannicus.
Yes, lovely, yes.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, well, thank you, kind brother Nero.
It's quite okay.
I have to say, it's with great pleasure.
Are you okay, brother? You seem a little bit coughy.
Oh, it's the Sauvignon. Always plays havoc with my. Well, it's with great pleasure that I am here with you tonight. Oh, God, sorry. Stay on the mic next time. It's
the poor guy, I didn't think he can handle his drink. I was like that once. Oh, I say, he's rather blue in the face. Oh, and white froth is coming from his mouth. Do you think he was allergic to the jaguar testicle salad we gave him earlier? Or the hamster and scrotum canapes?
I say, you know, I can't really breathe.
Oh, that is a shame. He seems such a nice boy. Oh, that is a shame. Guard, we'll take him outside and bury him, please. Now, people, settle down. Now, the host of the party may well have died, which is a shame. Unexpectedly, of course. But by the looks of things, sadly, quite painfully, but he would not have wanted us to grieve. No, he wouldn't have, no. So come on, let's start the drinking games. Bring out Naples' finest vineyard. Hooray!
Well, I mean, that gives you a great insight there, doesn't it, into how detached someone in that position of power was from any form of empathy.
Certainly no brotherly love there.
No, didn't let anything get in his way.
So, with Britannicus, the only real threat to Nero, dead, poisons, it's widely believed, by Nero.
Well, it certainly sounded like it, yes.
Agrippina's influence was terminally weakened, and Nero also began to realise he was the boss to rule Rome. He didn't need Buros or Seneca and any of those other old farts that were telling him how things should be done. He was the chosen one after all. He was backed by the gods.
And what more backing do you need in those days? Well, the turning point in the Nero reign came largely through Nero's inherent lust, of course, and lack of self-control. Mm. Something, of course, you can relate to there, Matt. Both of those areas.
The two deadly sins there, yeah.
And four years into his reign...
Curse you, Wayne. Curse you.
4 years into his reign, he took, as his secret mistress now, the beautiful Poppaea Sabrina. Was it Sabina?
Sabina.
Not Sabrina. Sorry, that's some bottom name.
She's the witch, of course, Sabrina.
That's right. Poppaea Sabrina. Now, she was the wife of his partner in frequent exploits, our old friend Marcus Salvius Otho.
Now, listeners, he will become an emperor of Rome, but he'll only last for about 3 months before being assassinated, but one to remember.
Yeah, and then in AD 58... Otho was dispatched to be the governor of a place called Lusitania, no doubt to sort of moving out of the way so Nero could focus his attention on the young lady Poppaea.
Inverted commas, yes. Agrippina presumably seen the departure of Nero's apparent friend as another opportunity to rehearse herself with Nero. She sided with Nero's wife, Octavia.
Well, this Agrippina just does not give up, does she? But if you remember, listeners, Octavia, he's been married since his early teens, of course, to this girl. But now he's sort of having it off with his mistress on a regular basis. She's marginalised.
And obviously, Octavia naturally opposed her husband's affair with Sabina, Poppaea Sabina, as you would imagine.
That's right.
She's not going to be up for that. She's not going to be a fan of the affair. Agrippina started to spread rumours, though, about Nero's affair around Rome.
And as you might expect, Nero reacted very angrily to this, Matt, very angrily.
Yeah, well,
in fact, as Chaucer. Chaucer, the grandfather of writing.
A great author.
Yeah, as he actually said in his notes about Nero, he said, I'll quote this, he went absolutely spastic and opened a can of whoop-ass on Agrippina's ass. Now, I might as well thumbing a translation from the original Latin there, but anyway, the point is, it was now that things for Nero and his mother got to a stage where the only option, Matt, was a permanent solution.
A permanent vacation called assassination. And a one-way ticket to Deathsville was the only place to go.
Deathsville, yeah. Not a nice beach. You wouldn't like to have a picnic there, would you?
Well, unless, of course, you're a zombie or one of the Legion of the Undead, of course. Then it's not such a bad prospect.
Or a lycanthrope. That's a werewolf, of course, Matt.
Yes, yes. Educational.
Yeah, or maybe a nude sunbathing wraith with a towel over his ghoulies.
Okay, moving onwards from all this talk of death,
yes.
And this conversation is dying.
So keep it light. According to the historian Suetonius, we've talked about him before, very famous, of course, various attempts on Nero's mother's life were then made. Now, these became quite inventive and imaginative. Now, just because it's imaginative doesn't mean it's a good idea. A little bit like, you know, those old Batman series, you know, from the 1950s.
Yeah, Adam West.
I remember, actually, you got the Joker. If you Google a penguin's exploding octopus, listeners, and you'll see this. Basically, what you've got the Joker, the Penguin, and the Riddler all in a little circle, sort of planning what they're going to do to Batman. They say, "Oh, Batman will step on Joker's jack in the box, fly through the window into the arms of Penguin's exploding octopus."
What could go wrong?
They would have been much better off just shooting Batman in the head, basically. Yeah. So, what we're trying to say here is that Nero might have been coming up with some unnecessarily imaginative ways of doing this to maybe try and fool public opinion. So, let's go back now and see how he did this, what happened. Because Agrippina, his mother, he thought had interfered with his plans for the last time.
Imperator Nero, you have summoned me to your presence, me, Amelo Sevinus.
Welcome.
Chief Assassin of the Second Assassin Guild of Rome. I say second, we're behind only the Working People's Assassin Union Guild. They're first, but we're still very good. How may I serve your imperial person?
Well, Amelo,
I need you, sir, to kill my mother.
Amelo, I hear you gasp. I hear you gasp.
Sorry.
Thank you, Amelo. My ruddy mother. Throughout my life, Amelo, she has thwarted me here. She has thwarted me there. She thwarts me everywhere. But no thwart no more. Oh, no. For she be dead upon my command.
you speak very loudly. Please try and keep it down. We're trying to keep this secret, you see. Now, fear not. She can be dead before the day is out. Would you prefer the knife or the poison? Would you like her to know it was you?
No! Oh. No, Amelo. I want something very special for her, Amelo. A knife won't do. A poison too crude. No, Amelo. I want you to do something very special.
Again, just keep it down a bit. I can as you decree, Lord. What do you have in mind, O masterful ruler of the known world? I've never been out of the city.
I want you to construct a bed. A four-poster bed. The roof of this bed must be heavy. Bone-crushingly heavy. When my mother, my controlling mother, lie on the bed at night, the bed will collapse, crushing her to death. Thwart me no more, mother.
Well, that's quite complicated, Master Nero.
But you'll admit, ingenious.
Yes, no doubt, but it's got a good chance of going wrong, if I'm honest.
No one will think it anything but an accident. That is the key. Oh. Now go. I can't be seen talking to you. Bring me death, Armello. Bring me death.
Okay. Right away.
So, off the assassin went. He constructed this sort of four-poster trap bed thing that...
must have taken ages and a lot of ingenuity to pull together.
Yeah. So this bed had a lot of weight on the top section of the four posters there. And, of course, the idea was that Agrippina lay on this bed and, for whatever reason, something gets fired off. The top drops down and it crushes her to death. What a devilish design.
An unfortunate accident ensues, yeah.
Now, you may be surprised to hear, listeners, that it didn't actually work at all. Complete failure. Agrippina went to bed, had a lovely night's sleep on this bed mat, sort of probably dreamt of world domination as well, and then woke up and quite literally left the room. And then the bed collapsed. So, didn't work out too well, the first imaginative attempt by Nero. And therefore, the assassin then went back to Nero with the news.
Bad news, huh? I wouldn't like to be the one imparting that bad news to Nero.
My masterful lord.
Armello!
Hello, yes. We worked on the bed, but with the luck of the gods, nothing to do with your stupid design. Your design. Brilliant design, really. But, with the luck of the gods, I'm sorry to say, your mother survived. Perhaps now I can creep into her house at night and slit her throat as she sleeps, nice and easy, with no one thinking it's anything but a wobbery.
Enough! Enough! She has thwarted me again, always thwarting me, the queen of thoughts. Oh, how the gods play with us, Armello. They play their games and thwart our plans.
So, Lord, shall I kill her tonight? I mean, the knife, her throat, easy. No god can stop me do that.
Armello, fear not. I have a creative plan.
Jeez.
A plan that cannot fail.
Master of the rising sun and setting sun, what is your command to kill this woman then?
My mother is not a keen swimmer.
Here we go.
In fact, she rarely ever swims.
Okay.
I want you to build me a boat.
A boat?
A special boat.
A special boat.
A boat that looks and feels actually like a boat.
You mean a boat? A real boat?
Yes.
Okay, well, I have built boat builders, but I don't quite understand what you're getting at.
This boat must have a button. Or a lever. Once pulled, the boat slowly falls apart, leaving the crew of the boat to sea. The sharks, the giant octopuses. She will drown and thwart me no more.
Well, just as you say, Lord, I will... It's going to cost you, but I will do this for you, Master, but...
But what?
Well, I can't help wondering, Lord. Could I just stab her, Master? I mean, it'd be much easier.
No, Armello. I must have this drama unfold as I have directed. Now go. Bring me death, Armello. Bring me death.
Death it is then, Master.
So, off the killer went. Now, over a month he took to build this boat, this fantastic invention that he did indeed correctly build, had a lever in it, that once the lever was pulled, the boat would duly slowly start to fall apart. So, getting Agrippina on the boat was no problem at all. She went on a boat trip with her friends, and they went into the Mediterranean Sea for a little trip. Once they were suitably out of shore, the lever was pulled. The boat then slowly began to fall apart, as planned. Agrippina panicked, her friends panicked, but it was closer to shore than Nero had hoped and planned for. And Agrippina, never the best swimmer, but was still able to swim back to shore and safety. Now, she'd seen her bed collapse. Now she'd seen a boat collapse. These very bizarre attempts on her life were something, as we said earlier, from a Batman 1950s or James Bond movie. Very elaborate and bizarre and very likely to fail. But she knew that somebody had it in for her. She had a pretty good idea whom. The killer, though, had to make his way back to Nero and tell him the bad news.
Okay, so, Lord.
Tell me. Is it good news?
Your brilliant design, the boat, the lever was pulled, and the boat fell apart.
Ha ha ha! My genius.
She swam back, my lord.
Ah.
She swam back. My men saw her arrive at the shore and she walked up the beach. We could have taken her then. But not without your blessing, of course.
My mother. She thwarts my every waking moment. She thwarts like thwarting was a world thwarting championship. I'm a loss of what to do. She has drained me, Armello, drained me of my creativity.
If I may, my lord, for this is my business, me and the boys, well, we came up with a plan. Your genius here, lord, but I think you may like it. Fitting with your own design, we came up with a plan involving a trap door, a fine roast lamb, and another lever. We could try this.
Ridiculous! Ridiculous, Armello! No, Armello. Go to her house and just club her to death. I can't take the drama of this anymore. Go, Armello. Bring me death.
Armello, bring me death.
At last, her clubbing. So this time, as killers broke into Agrippina's home, they arrived and she realised her time was up. Before she died, she is reported to have said, "Smite my womb," in a direct curse upon Nero, whom she knew was behind this attempt on her life. Very successful attempt, because it killed her.
Nero reported to the Senate that his mother had plotted to have him killed, forcing him to act first.
Justification there, yeah.
The Senate didn't appear to regret her removal at all.
Mm.
There had never been much love lost between the senators and Agrippina. She'd, as we said, she was a bit of a schemer.
Yes, she was.
And she twiddled a few knobs and tugged a few levers of power, and they were pretty keen to get rid of her, to be honest. So we leave part one here. Nero is beginning to take control. He secured his position by killing his mother. And he will be celebrating this with wild parties, orgies, and, because he's a massive thespian, big theatrical performances.
Yes, as we heard earlier when we stepped back in time to see him interacting with people, he certainly does like his theatrical performances.
He's a drama queen.
So, yes, obviously this is a two-parter, and in part two, Matt, what are we going to see? Well, I'll tell you.
I can't wait.
We'll see Nero's vices starting to take control of his life. And we'll be looking into the sort of the foreign affairs, in some cases, a little bit crazy, that he perpetrated. Remember, listeners, the Britons don't like to be overtaxed. We'll also see a glorious thing, his worldwide tour of theatres.
Yeah, Nero went on tour.
He did, a worldwide tour. Sort of like his version of the X Factor.
He was a very keen musician
and
actor.
It's very much his tournament. It's sort of like Simon Cowell getting up and singing on stage in front of everyone. Try not to picture that if you can. And now, bizarrely, Nero will also compete surprisingly successfully in the Olympic Games themselves.
So thank you again for listening to another edition of Historical. And please be patient and wait for episode 2 of Nero.
You shouldn't have to wait too long, listeners, for that one. It's already written, but Matt's going away on holiday for a couple of weeks. It's all right for some, isn't it? So we have to wait for him to get back. His time is more important than ours, listeners. But we should say thanks again. Thanks again to you, listeners, for all of your messages and support. We've got listeners in about 80 countries now, and we're lucky enough to have tens of thousands of downloads these days, which is great.
Yes, thank you very much. We appreciate every single one of them.
We really do, yeah. But that said, we've not actually done any marketing at all yet. We're pretty sluggish on that side of things.
We have not quite embraced the social media and as well as we should have.
So that said, any help you guys can give us by giving a review, hopefully favourable, on iTunes or similar would be greatly appreciated. And the numbers mean this is costing us quite a bit now, but fear not, we're determined to keep it free.
That's what it's all about. It'll always be free, but if there is any sponsors out there who would like to get in touch, then we are very open to that idea.
And the means by which you get in touch, of course, are historical@hotmail.com by email. What else have we got,
Matt? We've got the Twitter feed, which is historicalpod, and we've got Instagram, historicalpodcast.
Or, of course, our Facebook page. You can Google that one.
Yes, which is just historical. So, thank you again for listening, and have a wonderful time until you hear from us soon.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.